Hello, and a big warm welcome to you, and welcome to the Aware Parenting Podcast. My name's Marion Rose, PhD, and today we're back to the food series. We've got just maybe one, well, we've definitely got one, maybe two more episodes in this series on food, feelings, and trust. And I'm so delighted to have back on the podcast Kim Cousins. Welcome, lovely Kim.
Thank you.
So Kim was on with her colleague Erin back in episode 136, so 40 episodes ago, which is amazing. And I really recommend going and listening to that one if you haven't already. I love that episode so much. So thank you again, Kim, for that. And so Kim, you're an Aware Parenting instructor, but you can describe much more about all the other roles and titles that you have much more effectively than me. So would you be willing to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for having me back on, Marion. I very much appreciate it. I am a registered nurse and I work on a perinatal mental health unit. I am currently studying a graduate certificate in family therapy with the long dream of becoming a family therapist, would be amazing. And I also teach Circle of Security on our perinatal unit as to outpatients. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for explaining that. I want to drop in a quick question. What do you love about Aware Parenting?
That's a big question.
That could be the whole podcast, but I just think that could be a nice question to just see at the moment, what are you really loving about it?
At the moment, I think I am loving the probably listening to big feelings and supporting mums and families in their first year of life, listening to feelings, so understanding more about the cry and how healing that can be. And that has such a big flow-on effect of the baby, and not just with, I think sleep's the biggest one, but I think the flow-on effect that happens, you know, in their ability to tune into their baby just from listening, like, to their big feelings, because they're watching their baby and what they're doing constantly. They're so much more attuned and they notice like things. They're like, I never noticed their body's like so much more relaxed, or, you know, I'm noticing when he's got big feelings, he's more pinchy, or, you know, just so much more about their baby, which is so beautiful because they are so much more than what we see, you know, straight up. It's like they're telling such a bigger story of what's going on for them. And when we can become more attuned to that, it's just really beautiful to see. And just the connection that happens, like, it just removes so much, I think, responsibility of getting everything perfect, because the parents become so much more curious as to who their baby is. And yeah, I really love watching that happen.
Oh, I love that, Kim, that attunement, that connection, that awareness, the kind of experimenting, the relationship. Did I say curiosity that you said? I love that word. It's such a beautiful one, isn't it? To hold that rather than there's a right and a wrong. It's like the curiosity of the relationship and what the baby is communicating. So thank you for so much advocating for that for babies and families. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. I love it. I love it so much. It oozes out of me too.
I know it does.
All the time.
So wonderful. Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about food, and I do want to say before we say anything further that food is such a big topic for so many people. I think it's one of the biggest, most emotion-laden feelings that there often is in parenting, but also in life, probably alongside screens, possibly. That's another one high up. So I really also want to remind listeners to please, please, please listen in to yourself, to really check in whether you are willing to listen to this now for a start, and also if there's anything that we say as you're listening to the episode that you actually feel called to pause for a moment and just to listen into yourself and perhaps get support. It can be really normal and natural for these kinds of conversations to help us connect with our own painful feelings. And I was talking to you before, Kim, wasn't I, about remembering the other day when I was thinking about this episode, how I was in my early 20s around food and how excruciating it was. And I might share a bit about that today, and how that is really normal and natural in this culture for many people to have a lot of big feelings in relation to food. So it's a big journey, isn't it? The untangling. And I think often with Aware Parenting, we might start off saying, oh, you know, I want to support my child to stay or return to a deep connection with their bodies and trusting their bodies around food and what they need and when they need it and how much they need it. And often that really invites us to go on a massive journey of really reconnecting with ourselves. And that's really big, isn't it? It's huge. And it's certainly one that journey that I went on. And so I'm just really grateful for you coming on and sharing about this, Kim, and to really acknowledge it's so normal and natural for all of us to be on this journey somewhere or other, because the whole culture is really set against helping us be deeply connected with our bodies in relation to food, but also in relation to sleep and healing and attachment and all the things. So just so much love and compassion to all of us wherever we are on that journey.
Oh, yes, thank you. I'm just, yeah, the journey, I think, is so big. As we, I guess, sharing a little bit of that when you asked me, would I come on to share some of the stories that I was explaining to you about my children? And I was like, yes, that would be amazing. And then all of a sudden, I was like, oh my gosh, my story is so much bigger than I think ever probably brought awareness to. And that really, for a moment, I was like, oh, I'm not sure I'm ready to do this. But yeah, probably the story that really stood out that we were talking about when I got my certificate actually was when we went out for dinner with Sid and a big group of people, and Aisha actually wasn't there, but the beautiful mum gave us all lolly bags, or all the kids' lolly bags, and there was cake and cupcakes, and Matt, my husband, and I were kind of just let's, eat what he was choosing to eat, because we really wanted to take that stance in trusting, like allowing that trust to happen, and within Sid, and he went for it and he ate everything. And I just remember at one point Matt and I looking at each other going, what are we doing? Okay, but we let it happen. And that night we got home and Sid said his tummy was really sore, and then throughout the night he had a really big vomit. And Matt and I, we didn't really say anything to him about it, but he said, I think I ate too many lollies. And it was just like, I guess we were probably both really taken back that he had that ability to then see what he had eaten affected his tummy. So it, yeah, I mean, obviously, when we eat too many lollies and stuff, you can feel pretty crappy straight after it, but not trusting his ability to tune into that, I think, well, we weren't aware of that ability within him, and allowing that trust to happen, we saw it unfold. And I think the beautiful part of that story was that the next week my mum was looking after Sid, and she gave him a packet of Skittles, and he opened the packet up and he ate like three Skittles, and then he said, Nani, I don't want any more because I don't want it to make my tummy sore. And it was just like, whoa, like his ability to learn from that experience has given him that trust within himself to know what to and what to not eat. And really reflecting in that space, it's like, if we come over the top of our children all the time and have that control and say to them, don't eat any more lollies because you're going to get a sore tummy, they kind of look at you and go, well, I don't know that because I've not experienced it, so I'm not going to trust you on that. And I'm just, I'm feeling like you're always telling me what to do, kind of thing. And when you can allow that, like take two steps back and be more curious as to what can happen, it's such a learning experience, I think, for our children to really know for themselves, like what is actually going on within their own bodies rather than being told what's going to happen. And yeah, I mean, it was pretty big for Matt and I to sit back in that space, because it comes with a lot of judgment too from other people in going, you're letting your child do that. Like, but I think, yeah, like for the outcome of that is that he now has that ability to trust himself. And I guess it's a bigger process than that too. Like at dinner time, we also trust Aisha and Sid as to what they want to eat. And they will, at times, like Aisha will say, I love meatballs. And then, the next week she'll say, I don't want meatballs. And it's like, well, that makes sense, because sometimes we won't want to eat meatballs, but it could be, what we deem as our favorite meal. But at times we're like, actually, I don't feel like that. And really allowing that trust to happen, which doesn't mean that I don't cook three different meals every single night, but we'll put what's in front of them and give them a form of, I guess, autonomy on their plate so that they can have, meatballs, but it might be cut up carrots or capsicum, and, just things that they can pick and choose. And just giving them that bit of freedom, I think, has been really helpful in allowing them to have that choice and use their voice in what they do and, don't want to eat. And I think from that they've gained such a broad range in what the food that they will eat. And just recently, Aish was really sick, and she said to me, "Mum, I just want broth." And I was like, "Amazing," because I'm like, I know that's really healing for her. And it is a running joke in my family and bigger family that they'll always say, "Oh, Kim, she gets out the chicken feet and makes broth," which I know there's probably a lot of vegetarians or people that don't eat it. And I'm sorry to the people that are listening that it feels, not nice. But it's been a massive part of our healing journey in trying to come back to what it is that our bodies want, and that innate wisdom, I think, Marion, that you always talk about, in allowing our children to really be able to. And Sid, he'll call it, he'll say, "Mum, can I have a special drink?" when he's sick, and that's having broth too. And so his journey with food, we tried to give him a range of food that was, like liver and broth. And I think there's a really amazing podcast, I think it's Boob to Food, and they spoke about how when your children are sick, that they may not need to have so much food in their bodies. It's more, that they need to keep hydrated, but they may not eat so much. And just the other day, actually, when Aisha was sick and she didn't eat for a period of time, and I was like really trying to sit back and trust that process, but it was really challenging because I was like, we're told you need to eat, and you've got to eat all the time. And when she wasn't eating, I was like, oh, okay. And then she, but it's, I guess that trust is such a bigger picture too, because she then was like, "Mum, I'm going to go outside." And she was lying on the trampoline and fell asleep in the sunshine on the trampoline. And then she came back inside, she's like, "Mum, I still feel so tired, I'm going to go to bed." And she went to bed, and then she didn't eat for all of that period of time, and I was just trusting that that's what she needed. And then the next day, it was like she was so much better. And after, and then that night was when she had the chicken and corn soup, actually. So it was just like, that full trust in that process, which I do find extremely challenging to do at times when I'm fueled with anxiety around the sickness too. Like, my head can go into a place that's just like, oh, bring back that logical mind, please, because it's really hard to trust when you feel really anxious. But just keeping coming back to that, watching curiously, has been incredibly helpful for us.
Yes. I love hearing all of those. Thank you so much for sharing that. Such amazing stories. How old was Sid when he had that experience with the lollies or the sweeties?
I reckon he would have been, it didn't feel like that long ago, but I mean, in saying that, it could have been a year ago. But I reckon it was probably only maybe 6 months ago, maybe, possibly. Yeah. So it wasn't, I think
So
it was when.
just for the listeners, just to know, like, have a sense of how old he is, because
Sorry,
listeners
yes.
might go, oh.
He just turned 3 yesterday.
Turned
Sorry.
three.
Yeah, probably 2.5, maybe. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Because really, as you said so beautifully, it's like really to trust children. I think in our culture, we're really brought up and taught not to trust children, particularly at a young age, to believe that they don't have innate wisdom and that we need to tell them. So to really share that experience, I think, is so beautiful. The birds are, of course, the birds are here singing really loudly, of course. I can't believe they're literally always here every single time. If you really want to join in, hello, welcome, welcome. So the other thing I wanted to say is I can imagine you could have literally spent the next 10 years going in conversations with him about no, don't have that, and that would be too much, and don't do that. And him, because he's never got to that edge of like what his body, where is uncomfortable for him, and what type of food isn't a fit for him to have too much of, you could have literally had 10 years of battles and conflict and fighting each other. You've saved yourself all of that experience. And not only supported him to be deeply connected with his body, but so much more ease in parenting as well, so much more connection, so much more relaxation. So that really jumped out at me. It's like, wow, you could have really had a whole different experience there, couldn't you, for years.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that the trust, like with food, it then brings in so much more in that, like, when your voice feels seen and heard, how much that changes every part of you. That it's like, well, when you can trust your children to make decisions, like, they feel that within their bodies so much. And it's just like, it trust, like allows them to trust in processes of doing, when they are tired and they need to sleep, like, really enabling that to happen. Or just even things like, when they're cold and you're like, oh, like you're cold, like, but it's really hot outside. And then going, well, I'm trusting that you'll make that decision when you're ready to take your jumper off, or, or you need a jumper on, or whatever it might be. It's like, it's so much more than that. But these little, well, they're not little, they're big parts, but allowing that trust to happen allows them more ability to trust themselves more in what they do need, and then asking for it, which I think is something, yeah, I probably in regards to food had a different story. But also then in, the people that are surrounding us, I can see sometimes that that can be really hard for them to watch, when we've been out for dinner and Aisha and Sid have kind of sat down and eaten a bit, and then they've gone off and they've played, and then they've not eaten, and they're, people have made comments like, aren't you going to make them sit down and eat their dinner? And it's like, well, they might not be hungry right now because they're so excited to be with family and friends, and allowing them that space to be able to go off and make that decision when they want to come back and eat their dinner. And like, I think that's really helpful for them too, because they're not forcing themselves to sit down and eat because, we've paid for them to eat. I mean, they've got no idea what the concept of that actually is anyway. And we always try and take it home with us because, when they do get home, that's often when they're hungry. So it's really trying to trust that situation and the process of that, rather than forcing them to eat something when, perhaps they don't really want, they're not ready to eat at that particular time. It's been really helpful for us and them developing that trust within themselves too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really seeing that process happening, isn't it, in real time when children are young, is you're actually seeing, of course, the more you trust them, the more they have that experience. They're playing out like Sid with that experience. He's getting to know that he can absolutely trust his body, that they both have that experience and that they are completely supported in that. And I do think that's one of the biggest things I've really witnessed with my lovelies, who are now 17 and 22, is they are so deeply connected with themselves. And I think in Aware Parenting puts it so much about trust, again, with all of these things, that trust in them, our trust in them, exactly as you said, it helps them internalize that trust, that we trust them, that their bodies are constantly communicating really important information, that they can trust that over and above what anybody else is telling them. It's a really life-changing experience, I think, to go through the world. I really see that with my son and daughter, to have that inbuilt self-listening as the top priority rather than what does someone else think or what is someone else telling me to do. It's, and of course, that's taking into account other people's opinions and thoughts and requests and needs and all of that, but actually to have that deep self-connection is primary, I think, is one of the most profound things I really observe about young people who've grown up with aware parenting. It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as well, like, food has such an impact on your body and how you function. And, to be able to really listen to what it is that you need is, has such a, like, it's so important to then how, the energy that we then have. And yeah, like, I think Sid just recently, like, both Aisha and Sid have been sick, and Sid said, Mum, I really want a kiwi fruit. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, like, let's get kiwi fruits. And it's like, yeah, that has so much vitamin C in it. Like, that makes so much sense why you want a kiwi fruit. And I'm like, yeah. And just like it, yeah, it's really nice to be able to watch, that process happen and really trust them and respect what it is that they are wanting to then, like, honor their body in fueling it. And yeah, really, like, we always try and have really healthy snacks around, but we also have sweets in our house too. And I think that's really important too, to see that at times they feel like they need more sugar, like, and then that's okay, and we allow for that to happen too, because I trust that they're not gonna, eat the whole bag of snakes or, all of the Easter egg, like, I have no self-control in doing.
Oh yeah, you know my Easter egg story. Did you ever hear me share that story? Well, for many, many years, we had years' worth of Easter eggs and other things. The whole door of the fridge for years was full of chocolate that they'd received from other family members at Christmas, birthdays, and Easter, because they just would have a bit and then they just didn't want to have very much of it. So literally had the whole door. They didn't want to throw it out, but they didn't really want to eat much of it. Whereas I, from so many years, was like, oh, there's chocolate in the fridge. I'll have eaten it by the next day. So it's not going to last very long.
Yeah, that's
So.
definitely me. I look at Aisha and Sid and I just I admire them, and and I was saying to you, Marion, that like I can't believe that they have that ability. Like at times I'm just like, oh, I have none of that, like none whatsoever, to have any self-control in in just over Easter time. Like I'm like, oh my gosh, I ate that whole bunny. Like I just kept going back to it. And then the feelings that come up in that space of just feeling so guilty about eating it and going, why do I have no control over that? And I think that's, like bringing into that topic of then really beating myself up about eating the bunny or the chocolate or the packet of chips. And then it's understanding that I have so much, like there's so many emotions that are sitting there that I'm trying to comfort myself by eating the food. And I think aware parenting has really brought to my attention how much bigger and painful that that food and that relationship that I've had with food my whole life has really been so, I think, turbulent. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but it's just been, I feel like for my whole life, it's always food has been not seen as fueling your body, but it's been like some form of a control or what is good or bad food rather than it being food. There's so much more in it. There's such a big story around food. And it's not just like your family of origin that brings that. It's society at such a bigger level that has such an influence on food. And I was just reflecting with a friend and saying how, I comfort eat, and I've got an awareness now that I'm comfort eating and I'm eating my emotions versus expressing them. And she said to me, she's like, oh, I do that all the time. I like when I have big feelings, I get a blanket and I get a tub of ice cream and I sit on the couch and I smash that ice cream down. And then she's like, but I never thought that I was suppressing my emotions. I thought I was comforting myself in that space. And I was like, oh no, you are comforting yourself, but it's understanding that you are doing what you've always done in being, with your emotions. It's trying to comfort yourself, making yourself feel safe, because it feels really overwhelming. And when I was reflecting about that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what it is that I feel like. I'm trying to create safety, and food has brought that safety to me, but then it's actually then got this other layer that I'll eat whatever it is, and then I feel enormous amount of guilt, and then I feel like shamed, shaming myself for eating it. And then it's like a never-ending sort of cycle. And then I look in the mirror and I then, see myself putting on more weight, going, I'm not going to be accepted in the world because I am this big. And then trying to like be, it's like a conflict within my head going, no, it's your personality that, like, or it's who you were accepted as who you are. But then, on the other side, it's like people were going to make comments on your weight. And and there's so much in it. And it's you watch on TV ads and it will be about, eating the ice cream after a relationship breakup, and you see the woman on the couch eating the big tub, or eating Maltesers after a breakup or whatever it is. And it's just like, wow, we are so conditioned without having, awareness about that. It's like, no wonder I'm 36 years old. And like you said, Marion, that we have so much conditioning. So for me to sit in a place to be able to, look at my kids and go, how do you do that? And like, I guess for me, I have to sit in that place and go, I need to bring in more compassion to myself, and to, that having and awareness, and I think this is just the beauty in aware parenting, is having support to really release those emotions, which like yourself and Joss have just been like so incredible to me, this past like few weeks in talking about this, because I didn't realize how big my story was around food. And reflecting back, as I was saying before, when I was in primary school, that someone made a comment of saying, you're a fat little thing, but it was not in a malicious way. Like he was saying it as in like he was grabbing my cheeks, and like it was, I could tell like it was from a place, I guess, of love, but not understanding how harsh his words were. And After that time, my family were really worried about me because I'd stopped eating and that I'd lost a really significant amount of weight. And then, like, looking back then at that time and going, wow, I was probably trying to get some control back in my life. And, in doing that was around eating. And it's like reflecting on that, that then you go, no wonder I've been trying to gain control, through diets and, many diets. And then even I've seen myself with, fasting, and I was, fasting and going, yes, I feel so good. And this is, I'm reading these emails that I'm getting from a particular company that's, promoting fasting. And I'm like, yes, that's what I'm feeling. I'm feeling all of that. And then it's like, oh, actually, no, I'm not feeling that at all. And just probably last year, and then really into this year, I've let go of all of that. I'm not at a gym anymore, and I'm not on any diet whatsoever. And I'm just really bringing awareness to trying to acknowledge what my feelings are and actually getting more support in feeling seen and heard, because everything else I feel like in life is such a band-aid, and it just slaps it across of what, like, that I understand everyone's in it for a purpose of, like, promoting, the gym and whatever. And I understand that the gym is really beneficial to some people to really release, the tension and feel really good within their bodies. But I think I had always had an intention of, like, yes, I want to feel good within my body, but it was so much bigger than that. It was more about, I want to lose weight because I feel like that's the way that I'm meant to be perceived in the world, as that particular weight to be accepted. And having that realization has brought up so many big feelings within myself, and really releasing that, probably talking about the shame that I feel, has really allowed me to probably have more awareness when I am reaching for the bunny to eat more chocolate, and to really go, okay, like, how can I bring love into this space rather than eating it and then just feeling really, really horrible after it. Yeah, it's been such a big process, which I'm so thankful for this opportunity to talk about, because it's uncovered so much more than I could have ever thought that I had capacity to probably dive into. But the power of being seen and heard and really deeply listened to has significantly changed my life, and aware parenting has brought all of that to me, which makes me feel really emotional talking about, to be honest, because it's just like you find out more and more about yourself from being curious within your own children, and how, like, we don't understand how much of an impact that we are having on our children when we talk about weight or about food being good or bad. And our children are downloading all of that, and for them to have a relationship with food that they see is fuel for their body, and there is no good or bad food, and to allow them to trust themselves is so big. And yeah, makes me feel like I know I have the ability to be able to do it, but I need to get through a lot of healing to be able to trust myself in that process again.
Oh, sweetheart, I feel so touched hearing all of that, and I'm sending you so much love. And I so appreciate your willingness to share this, because I think it's so common for most women to have some kind of a big journey around food. And I really appreciate you really naming all those layers and levels as well, in terms of like the magazines or Instagram, or all the social conditioning we have, as well as food meeting other needs, such as for control. And then also, we're also often doing that to suppress feelings, because our feelings are not welcome often in this culture. So there's just so many layers and levels to unravel, aren't there? And I really love you naming the shame and the guilt as being so important to tend to. I think often one of the first things to tend to. And hello, lovely birds. They're loving singing. I really wanted to share an experience that I had with a mentee a few years ago, where she came specifically. She had a diagnosis around food, and she felt so much guilt and shame whenever she ate to suppress her feelings. And we just really focused on working with dropping the guilt and shame sticks. That's really what we focused on. And it was so incredibly powerful, because once she'd released that and she wasn't hitting herself with those sticks anymore, and she'd healed from the past shame, the food stuff really kind of dropped away. It turned out that actually that so much of that whole cycle was really being driven by the guilt and the shame. And that was really my experience as well. So I really remember, I actually remember an experience in my early 20s where I went to a party and I remember feeling really nervous and scared. I was just, parties and me were not the thing often. And I remember eating this massive bag of crisps in England, chips in Australia or the US, and just feeling so uncomfortable in my body. And then I didn't know these terms back then, but picking up those guilt and shame sticks and feeling so completely consumed by guilt and shame that I then wanted to eat more of them, even though I felt really uncomfortable in my body. I wanted to eat more because the pain that I was creating by hitting myself with those sticks was so excruciating that I wanted to dissociate from that. And that cycle, it was almost like that was the first time I really saw that really clearly, like, oh my God. And of course, didn't have any of the understanding that I came to have with aware parenting, but it was like a really pivotal moment for me to see what was happening. And so that's why I talk so much in the Merriam Method, as you know, about really the power of when we're really willing to put down those guilt and shame sticks, increasingly replace them with self-compassion, just as you were talking about. And how that frees up everything, because that creates so much more safety to actually to be even just actually unconditionally loving with, oh yeah, I really want to go and eat that chocolate now. And am I willing to feel the feelings? Well, maybe I am, but maybe no, I'm not really. Am I willing to connect with a friend? Maybe I am, but maybe I'm not. And just to be completely unconditionally loving of ourselves when we do these things, and to have really this inner dialogue of course we do. We grew up in, and we live in a culture where feelings are not welcome. We live in a culture that doesn't, nobody has enough support unless they work really hard at it. All of these things, like the beautiful, absolute unconditional love of that. And I really love like working with mentees as well. I think I might have shared here about in sessions I've done things where they'll just bring their favorite snacks or food, whatever their favorite control pattern is, and I'll just sit there with them and they'll eat them and I'll just love them. And I think to really get that mirroring, that eating to suppress our feelings, we can just be unconditionally loved in that. Like, of course we do, and of course we did. And yes, we can absolutely increasingly get freer from that as we feel more and more comfortable in our body, as we catch up on expressing our feelings, all of that stuff. But just to release the judgment, and I think that just transforms everything. And it really comes back to what you were saying at the beginning as well. I really loved that you named with your children, and with that, when we're doing this, when we're trusting our children these ways in this culture, we can be met by judgment of others, or judgment of ourselves, or fearful thoughts about the future. Like, is this going to work? And what happens if it doesn't? What happens if they end up just eating whatever all the time? Because of course we don't know until we've experimented. Other people might tell us, people might be hearing us say these things and they go, but you know, until we've actually experimented ourselves and seen the results, it's really hard, isn't it, to trust this really does work, that we really can trust children, and actually we can really trust ourselves. And the more we are willing to receive support, like you're doing so beautifully, the more we're willing to share and talk, the more and more comfortable we get in our bodies, the more we release the guilt and shame, we can actually come back increasingly to really trusting our bodies. And that's what I love to share about my own journey from that 22-year-old me who had that experience at the party. Now, my relationship with food is, I so deeply listen to my body, and I, like similar to what you were saying about your daughter, I quite often eat the same thing day after day after day after day, and I just love it. And I usually get really passionate about something, and my body's just going, oh my God, I want to eat that. And I just want to eat it. And I want to eat it. And then I want to eat it. And the next day, every day, I want the same thing. And then my body will say, no, not that anymore. And then I'll listen in. Well, what's the next thing my body really wants to eat? So I just love living like that. It's so free that I know when I'm hungry. I still do sometimes eat to suppress feelings. I don't judge myself, but it's not very often. I never ever overeat and get full. I used to always go back, especially when my kids were younger. I'd go back and just go, oh, I just have a little bit more. I would constantly feel uncomfortable because I was eating more than my body needed. I never ever do that now. So I just want to name that in terms of, you know, being quite a lot older than you and my kids being a lot older, and just to know and to say we really can make massive transformations around this. It really is possible. And I so trust that you are and you will, and that in 6 months' time, you'll be having even a different experience. And everyone listening as well, like whatever your relationship with food is now, it really is possible to radically, deeply reconnect with the wisdom of our bodies again.
Yeah, love that so much, Marion. I just like in hearing you say speak about that, it's like when you have that ability to feel safe, and that's generally through expressing the emotions from you instead of fearing them and really being held in a space, it's like it opens up your heart to then be able to like be more you and not to fear you. And I think it was Joss that just recently said, she said, you know, I'm right here and I'm listening, and I'm still just loving on you when you eat, and I'm loving on you when you're expressing your feelings. And I was just like, whoa, that hit my heart so much, because I was like, I can be loved and eat, and I can be loved and cry. Like, you know, that ability to feel that deep within your heart and be so compassionate to yourself in loving you in all the parts of you that come up, and how important it is to really see that when you come in with guilt and shame, it completely takes you out of your body and you're not connected anymore. So it makes sense why you then, like, you know, dissociating, eating more and more, because it's just like, I can't be in my body right now because it feels too overwhelming. And it's when you can, yeah, like exactly what you said, just freeing yourself of that guilt and shame and talking about it and expressing every part of the emotion that comes up in that space. It's like then you have the ability to see clearer and to make decisions that it's not based on fear or, yeah, like, and bring more curiosity into that space. Like, I think you can't, I find it very hard to be curious when I'm anxious. Like, I don't have the ability to take two steps back. And I'm like, I'm anxious more often than not because I've got this buildup of emotion in me that I'm too scared to express. So it's just like, no wonder that you end up being in that space. Like, it's just like, oh, no wonder. And I think actually just another, it's not really a quick story, probably a big one, but just in regards,
I love your stories. I so welcome it, as long as it wants to be.
In regards, I'm just reflecting back when I had Aisha, and she was born in a beautiful weight, and my milk supply didn't come in until day 10, and it was quite a traumatic birth, and I really struggled with her to latch on. And so when my milk came in that space of 10 days, we were sort of floundering trying to work out what to do and support her in getting nutrients in. But anyway, she lost a significant amount of weight, and to get that back up was really challenging. And then it was kind of, I know that the beautiful health professionals and maternal child health nurses are doing the best that they can, but they're very fixated on the weight. And that was just like a snowball effect of just feeling so hopeless and helpless with food, and getting that into Aisha was so, like, yeah, really overwhelming, I think, in that space, because there isn't much holding space of the mother and the baby together, and then seeing how that unfolds when it's just the focus on the weight and not understanding. Then it's like, okay, what can we do to get this baby up to weight, like to the standard weight that is, you know, seen to be ideal? And it's like, well, how is the mother feeling in this space, and allowing her space to be able to go, I feel so hopeless and helpless right now. I can't feed my own baby, and she's lost weight, and, you know, what's going to happen to her if she's not gaining enough weight? Like, there are so many questions I remember having, but not feeling okay to ask, because I was just so focused and fixated on her weight. And then that continued for such a massive period of her life. Like, I think, how are you able to trust yourself with food now like you do? And, you know, she'll eat an ice cream and now, and she'll be like, Mom, I don't want any more, my tummy feels full, or, you know, I don't want any more ice cream. I'm like, what, any more ice cream? Like, what? Like, but I think back to, you know, when she was born and the struggle that we had, and, you know, changing formulas, you know, changing bottles, like, it was just forever trying to do anything we could to get her weight up to, you know, to the standard that it was acceptable for her to be on the chart. Like, and you think, oh, like, it was, yeah, we went in even into hospital because they were like, oh, her weight's not, you know, what we want. And I just reflecting on that, and I think there is so much more going on, I think, there is never properly uncovered in that situation. And I mean, for me, the anxiety that that brought me was just tenfold, like, to then the situation that we were in, and my anxiety was out of control at that point. And I remember trying to give her a bottle and she wouldn't take the bottle, and just feeling just so, I think, guilty that I couldn't feed my own baby, and completely hopeless and helpless in that situation, and not being able to then see any value in the role that I played as a mother because I couldn't feed my own baby. And I think, that should come naturally. Like, I should have been able to breastfeed. I should be able to feed my own baby, and not being able to do that. And then I remember watching Matt come home and him give her the bottle, me just crying, going, "She's not feeding, she's not feeding." And then he just sat down and gave her the bottle, and she took the whole bottle. I just remember going, "What am I doing wrong? Like, what am I, why am I not able to feed my own baby?" And it was just such a horrible feeling. And I think no one was probably going, "Let's hold her because she's the one that needs holding." And poor Aish was, subject to my anxiety. And in I and it's a story that I see quite often within the perinatal unit, of babies not feeding, and just seeing the mum in this incredibly anxious state. And there's so much more going on in that picture than, of what we perceive that we should be doing as a mother, and these expectations that we place on ourselves, and, even in society, that then that is cemented with comments that are flippant comments by health professionals, that they have no awareness of how that the implications of what they've just said on that bond within the baby and the mum together. Like, it's, yeah, it's a really hard situation to be in. And I think it, I also Aish with on, she was said to have a diagnosis of silent reflux. And I look back now and I think, oh, I know that it's a very much overdiagnosed, like, diagnosis within from GPs that come in with mums that are so anxious and their babies aren't feeding, or, they're not gaining enough weight, and then it's deemed, silent reflux, and they're put on medication for that. And that's really hard, I think, because they're, if we could hold the mum and the baby together and really see what's going on and allow curiosity into that space, then I think it would be very game changing to the way that we over medicate babies and the repercussions of that too. Like, I've then done a heap of work in trying to help Aish to, change the, like, the microbiome in her gut, because that was affected by the medication that she had. And, thinking that I gave that to her for until I think she was about 14 months old, until a new pediatrician said to me, "I want you to trust your daughter in that, she's allowed to have emotions and that she will eat what she wants to eat." And that changed everything. And it was, he said, "I don't want you to worry anymore about her. I'm going to take that on myself." And did a bunch of tests, and he said, "I don't think we need to do any of these tests, but I'm going to do them just because I can see your anxiety." And it lifted, like, that lifted. And I had no awareness about aware parenting back then, which I'm sitting in compassion to myself now. But yeah, there was an enormous amount of guilt in doing that. And I just, my heart paused to parents that are in a similar situation. And Aish was also on Wilbie's colic mix too. And I just think to myself, if only someone could come in and say, "It's so normal that your baby is unsettled, and that her need to cry to heal is so there. Like, she's experienced this traumatic birth and then multiple, appointments with doctors in back into the hospital she was born at, that it's very traumatic for both of you in trying to get her to latch on, and just this so much trauma that's sitting there." That I think, yeah, no wonder she was crying. Like, she was crying, she had so much to tell, but I just couldn't hear it because I had no support around me to be able to hear her cries, and to see the benefit that it would be in her crying to really heal from that stress and trauma, versus the way I looked at it was, "Why are you crying? And how can I, what am I doing wrong?" Like, it was just that constant in my head going, "I'm not good enough to be your mum." Like, it was so, yeah, it was so, the feelings of just, yeah, inadequacy of that. And these are the stories that were in my head that were just so strong. And I think, oh, that's, yeah, like, there was no trust in her in that she would take the bottle when she felt ready to. Going, sorry, coming back to food and getting lost in my own story. But yeah, it's just, I didn't have any ability to trust. And now I see, when babies have big expressions of their feelings and they're held, the way that they feed afterwards is just so different. Like they have this ability to want to take the bottle and to let you know when they've had enough of the bottle and they don't want any more. And breastfeeding too, like it's just amazing the power of really, I guess, for babies to feel seen and heard too, and how that changes their way with food. And that also then links into over dinner time. Sometimes Aish will sit down and she'll go, yuck. She'll just like, this is not eating any of it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can see you've got some big feelings there. And it's like, yeah, like I really honor that in her to be able to sort of say, I'm not eating anything because I've got these big feelings inside. So you could put ice cream in front of me and I'd still say yuck, because it's so much like that really big feelings inside. And trusting the process of her releasing the feelings, I think, has been real really challenging in a way, parenting, really trusting her and that she'll express them when she's ready, which is not related to food, I know, but that's been a really big journey, I think, in allowing that to happen rather than going, I can see you're frustrated, you're agitated, and knowing that you need to have a big cry or rage and really let it out, but being like, well, I can only provide as much as I possibly can for you and for you to feel safe. And when I sit in that place, I just watch her then be able to release her feelings when she's ready, and I'm like, oh, there it is. When you stop trying to force it, it's like, oh, amazing how it just unravels itself, which I think is the biggest thing in parenting, I think, is to be able to step back and, not to have to be so controlling. Like, you don't have to be like that, and it never feels nice doing it. And just actually stepping back and being more curious to what is happening allows your children to feel so much more seen and heard, and also yourself too in that space. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing, Kim. And my heart goes out to that you back then, that you and her back then in that newborn phase. And just I want to wrap you up in this bubble of love and listening and trust and support. And I really acknowledge all that you've really almost like harvested from that experience you had to really support mothers and babies and whole family systems to really experience that support that you really talk about, that understanding of the bigger picture. And I think it's so important to really name that. It's something that I think is really significant, the impact of birth trauma on babies' capacity to feed. It's something I experienced with Sunny. I think I've often shared the story about listening to his feelings on day dot because of the birth he had. And because he was my second baby, I already knew about where parenting. I'd listened to lots of feelings, but there's no way I could have done that on day dot. Being a first-time mother, I would have had no idea what to do, and we would have had a very different journey. So I think that is so important to really name and to really understand. If babies have got pain in their skull, or they've experienced things like a long birth, or forceps, or ventouses, or quick birth, that's going to have really big impacts on the way they feed. And to really understand that they have these inbuilt capacities to heal from that, actually, right from day dot through crying and raging, of course, generally with loving support of an aware parenting instructor, for example. And also, I really loved what you spoke about because I, in my own experience as well, talking about that bigger picture that you did so beautifully, is often there are deeper themes in the family lineage as well around ancestors and themes around starvation and potato famine in Ireland and all kinds of things that often actually we can really see being repeated and replicated. So I think really understanding that food is so complex, and if there are issues with babies and children, that to really look at the biggest picture and just see all the different effects. And what I love you naming is seeing how possible it is to change that, isn't it? To see how she is now. And again, my own experience with my daughter, I gave a massive breastfeeding control pattern. I so often fed her when she needed to cry to release feelings and heal from stress and trauma, even though we did listen to her feelings as well. And I supported her to heal from that so that she, as a young woman now, is so deeply connected with her body. And she really was by the time she was like three, four, she had reconnected with that. So I think it's really important for everyone to know, particularly parents, that whatever we've done earlier on, It's always possible to help them return to their innate wisdom, just as it is for us. I mean, it may take us longer and probably often does because we've had a lot more years of, well, we've got a lot more accumulated feelings. We've needed to use food a lot for many, many years often to suppress our feelings. We've got a lot more conditioning. We've been affected by the culture so much more, you know, so many reasons why it will often take us longer. But it is absolutely possible, whatever age we are and whatever age our child is, to support us to return to our innate, incredible body wisdom around food. So amazing, isn't it?
The power of healing, and also just gives so much hope, I think, to myself too, in that I feel like aware parenting for me has always been dipping my toe into the big emotional pool, and it's like I'm just going to put a little bit in, and that's the awareness that sits there. And then it's like, okay, I think I'm getting more seen and heard. I'm jumping in a little bit more, and then it's like all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm swimming in it, and I'm able to, yeah, really feel it. So I'm like, I feel like that's probably where I am right now, in the awareness around food, and just really acknowledging how much guilt and shame sits there after, eating what, I deemed as bad food, which, it's like just trying to, I guess, remove that, like everything that I've ever known about food, which actually, funny, my husband and I, we will get like whatever food it is out of the cupboard, and we'll say, guess that star rating. It's just so ridiculous, because there'll be like, some things that will have a 5-star rating that has like so many preservatives and just like all this junk in it. And it's like, how, like, no wonder we are so, unsure of what we should and shouldn't eat, because there is so much more in society that like has such an impact and influence on that. And then it's like things that are made like, butter or whatever that has like a 1.5-star rating, and it's like, but that's like a natural product with nothing in it. It's just like, oh yeah, how, no wonder we are here where we are and feeling the way that we do at times. And yeah, I guess bringing more play into it too, which has been helpful, I think. And Matt's really on board too, because I think he would say comments to me that he had no awareness how then I would internalize that. Like, he'd be like, whoa, you've eaten the whole bunny. And I'm like, oh, no, the shame and guilt I was already feeling is just being impacted more so. And we've had discussion around that. And I said, oh, please don't say that to me, because it makes me feel worse. And I'm trying to, work through big feelings that are coming up about it. And he's like, oh, I had no idea. And of course he had no idea, like I wasn't expressing it. So it's like, yeah, just it's an unraveling in itself. And just, I guess, talking about it more with people and my immediate family and extended family, and how the impact of food is so, I think, yeah, we all probably don't have the awareness around what we do and say, and actions that we can do that have a really big impact on our children and the way they view food and themselves and their bodies. So yeah, it's a big journey.
It's a huge journey, isn't it? And I really love you really naming that. And I think that cultural piece around how much conflicting information, like in food, probably more than anything else, parenting probably similar, but actually food even more. Like one person says, raw, it's only raw. Cooked food is really, really unhealthy. And someone else is like, no, don't ever eat raw because only cooked food is healthy. And no, it's the plant-based and the vegan, and then there's only people only eat meat, and you know, it's just almost anything you could have somebody saying, you know, what we're doing is in inverted commas wrong. And I think that's why it's so important to understand, and I see this in all of parenting and all of life, in fact, that we are so wise as human beings. Children are so wise, they are constantly trying to do what is the most helpful thing in the culture and the family that they live in. And so often we think there's something wrong with a child or something wrong with ourselves. And the way I see it, there's never anything wrong with us. We're always doing things that are really wise given what we've experienced and the culture that we live in. And when we come back to that, and that's what I just love to share with everybody always, is you are innately wise. Your body is innately wise. Your child is innately wise. There's nothing wrong with either of you. And of course, that doesn't mean that there might be physiological things that need tending to and that we might need to reach out to experts. But if we're to see on that bigger picture, there is nothing wrong with us and that we are wise and that we're constantly doing really wise things to actually survive in this culture that is really very disconnected from what is actually helpful and healing for human beings. I think that is just everything. So I'd like to shout that to the rooftops a million times a day to every single person listening to this, to really just see ourselves through the eyes of absolute unconditional love, that we're wise beings and we live in a culture that is really constantly trying to disconnect us from the truth of that. That's
I'm getting tearful thinking about it.
I saw you were. It's me on my soapbox. Sending love to your beautiful feelings. And that's my mission is to help everyone know there's nothing wrong with you, sweetheart. It's absolutely nothing wrong with you or your child.
I just love that. It just really made me reflect on what my friend said about how, she got a blanket and wrapped herself up and ate the ice cream, and she's like, "I thought I was doing the right thing." I'm like, "No, you are doing the right thing. Like, there's nothing wrong. Like, it's just understanding and having awareness about what we're doing and being curious as to what our behavior is really, what's going on, kind of thing." And there's, I think you just said that, like, it's keeping ourselves safe, and that's what we've done, and that's to protect ourselves and to really, keep ourselves in a position to keep on functioning in the world. And that's what we've been doing to, suppress our emotions because it's felt not safe to be able to, and really sitting in compassion with that. Yeah, as I say that, I'm really trying to say that to myself because that's like, yeah, I need to hear that, that I've done that. Comfort eaten because I've not felt safe to express my emotions. And the more I talk about emotions, the more freeing that I feel in, really being able to allow it all out. So yeah, it is such a beautiful space to be in with aware parenting and the community that supports you and really deeply sees you. I just, yeah, it's been life-changing to me. And as I'm uncovering a massive part of me right now in food, and yeah, I'm immersing myself more, I think, in aware parenting as we go, and yeah, as I go into this pool of emotions.
And thank you for really naming that, because I think maybe listeners in the podcast think, oh, because we're aware parenting instructors, it means that we've sorted everything out for all eternity. And it's just to really know that we're all on our journey and there'll all be certain things that we're working through. And yes, the longer the time we've been at it, the more we've healed and the easier things are. But we're all human beings living in this culture. And you know what I really love you talked about is, here I'm going to put it in more Marian method terms, is the way I see it is holding what I call love and will. So love is this absolute unconditional love for all of us and for all of our children, for exactly why we've done whatever we have around food, because we've always done it for really important reasons. And also knowing that it is absolutely possible to change wherever we are in our journey, whatever we've done up until now. So it's really holding both that love and the will, absolute unconditional love, and knowing that change is always possible. So much love to you. So much love. And it's so beautiful, isn't it? And I experienced that in my life, holding those two together always, unconditional love always. And knowing that change is always possible. And I'm talking all the time about my 92-year-old mum who's here in the room and how she's continuing to change at 92. Really, 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 whatever wage or whatever age we are, it's never too late. Never too late.
I love that so much. I just like reflecting on probably what you said to me at the very beginning is what are you most enjoying about aware parenting? And I think as we've been talking, I'm like, actually, I mean, the first part absolutely is what I love, but I think the power of healing, and I think that, like, I not going to go into that story because it's way too big, but the separation that Aisha and I had in the first year of her life, and that there is an ability to be able to heal the separation trauma that we've both experienced, and but just not like, I mean, that part which I'm working very hard on at the moment. And but then, there's so many parts that I'm like, oh, like, we don't have to be like this anymore. Like, there is an ability to heal, and it's not a band-aid, just that slapped on, like, okay, so we'll make you feel better for the moment, and then but it's gonna reoccur, and it's gonna keep, I mean, which possibly, there'll be parts that still come up throughout our life together, and what we face in our life will be re-triggering, but to know that we can talk about it, and it's, those really, like, we can always be healing from it is so powerful. Like, I think if I didn't know that, I'd be pretty sitting in a pretty dark place because, yeah, it's just knowing there's something doesn't feel right, and then being able to explore that more so and know that there is an ability to be able to heal that is so powerful because it just brings so much hope. And I think, yeah, we all need that at times, especially the world can be a pretty hard place at times, but to know that there is hope is really beautiful.
Yeah, it's a wonderful essential part of aware parenting. I think we've almost got that as both parts, isn't it? It's deep, deep trust in human nature, really, but babies and children and teens, and also knowing that we have this inherent capacity to heal, and we are constantly, constantly aiming to heal and become more whole, I guess we could say. And that's an innate capacity we all have. So beautiful, isn't it? Ah, thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for coming along and being here. I just love having conversations with you. And I know there's going to be so many people contacting you after this because I know that's the effect that you have on people and you're sharing. Your story is so powerful. So thank you. And for all those people who do want to learn more about you and connect with you and follow you on social media and so on, would you be willing to share some info for them?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for allowing this opportunity to happen because it's yeah, been so therapeutic in the build up to being able to do this.
That's one way of putting it, isn't it? You could say, oh, thanks, Marion, for
Bring
inviting me to come
up
on there.
all these big things that
Yeah, my pleasure, anytime.
effect on people. I am on Instagram at Kimberly.cousins, and I'm yet to do Facebook, but I hope to be able to change that. I was at the Aware Family Therapist, but I've since changed in coming back to finding myself more and wanting to be me more and bring more of that to people in my offerings. So yeah, it's at Kimberly.cousins on Instagram.
Would you be willing to share your name because not everyone might know how Kimberly's spelt?
Yes,
I will
yeah.
also put it in the show notes, but just in case anyone who's listening and wants to know it straight away and go, which I really recommend. I love your Instagram. I think it's really beautiful. So I really recommend everyone coming and having a look. But would you be able to spell it out, please?
Yeah, it's KimberlyLey dot cousins.
Lovely.
Kimberly.com.
Thank you, lovely. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much, Marion.
Ah, my pleasure. Any last words? Well, last words, that sounds funny, doesn't it? Would you like to say anything as we complete the podcast to parents who are listening and some words of support or encouragement? What would you really love to say to the listeners right now?
I think probably that just sitting back in trust, I think, and if that's not possible, then just being curious with the anxiety that may be there to then get support to be able to really hold that for you so that you can then sit in trust because I think it can be life changing when you have that ability to trust yourself and also trust your children. But it's always a bigger picture and getting support to be able to really uncover that. Or dive into that bigger picture, or just put the puzzle pieces together, maybe, of your life and how it's always such a bigger story than what you're seeing in front of you. And I just
Yeah.
can't recommend support enough. I've been I was reluctant to get it when I had Aisha, and I am now just trying to. I'm swimming around in the support pool. Yeah, emotional pool. So yeah, support has just been life changing to me, and yeah. I love being able to give that support to others too. I think that it's always a parallel journey that you're on sometimes, and you don't want to feel like that you're inferior to someone. It's always like everyone's kind of always on the same level, and just to be able to explore life with someone else, I think is really helpful. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. So, would you like to share as well what you're offering at the moment so people can know what they can do with you?
Yeah. So I haven't I haven't got it up on my Instagram. That's a process that technology is always hard for me to get around, but I'm offering one-on-one and I've been doing a few one-on-one consultations. And yeah, I'd love to be able to offer one-on-one consultations with a Voxer support because I found that incredibly helpful in my support journey to have Voxer right there real time to be able to download what my emotions are has been really changing in my healing journey. So yeah, I'd love to be able to offer that to other people too. And yeah, and one-on-one, I think just messaging me on Instagram is probably the best way to go about it at the moment until I can wrap my head around spending more time into the technology of setting up Instagram and a platform of yeah, connecting in. Oh, it's all big.
A lot, isn't it? It's a lot, and I think simplicity is so wonderful, isn't it, to know that people can just send you a DM over on there and connect with you. So thank you for all that you're doing. I so appreciate all that you're doing for families, and I know I'm going to be continuing to do on a much bigger and bigger level as the years go by. So I really, really appreciate you. Thank you for being here. Thank you, thank you.
Marion, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. And for listeners as well, if you perhaps haven't listened to the Food, Feelings and Trust series, there's a whole series around food. If you go back, there were a few episodes that were related to my book, but before that, you can listen to more episodes if you want to. And also to plug my latest best-selling book, da, 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 which is called I'm Here and I'm Listening. And there's a whole chapter in there on food. So I go into a lot of things in quite a lot of depth. So I invite you to come and have a read if you haven't already. Thank you so much for listening and sending love to any feelings that you might have as a listener in listening to this. That's a lot of listens, isn't it? I'm here and I'm listening. I'm going to add another one in. We're here and we're listening. We are sending you so much love to any and all feelings you might be feeling. And really, again, to remind you, I love what you said, Kim, about swimming in the sea of support. That to practice aware parenting and to be on our own journey of transformation, receiving empathic support is so, so central. So please do reach out for support, whether that's with a listening partner, empathy buddy, or an aware parenting instructor. I really, really recommend people reach out to you, Kim, and just send you lots of love.